Lori Olson here with you on KILR, and in continuing with KILR's tribute to veterans during Veterans Week, I had the pleasure of talking with one of my other older brothers who served in the Air Force, retired Master Sergeant Dwayne Brewer. So, Dwayne, why did you choose the Air Force?
My mom made me. She did not necessarily say you will go into the United States military, the Air Force preferred, or anything like that. I had to do something. I had to move up, out, and choose some path. So there were recruiters that came to the high school, of course, and pamphlets were handed out, and happened to have one at home, I think, on the table. And Mom, in her own way, read it and handed it to Dad. And so they kind of showed me that that was the best choice. It was a bold move. Probably the scariest thing I ever did in my life.
At what point did you think, what did I do?
Immediately. I tell you what, true story. Back then, you'd go to the Spencer Airport and they'd fly you to Des Moines to the induction center. And you would take the physical and whatever testing, and then you'd get sit down with a career counselor. And if they were going to take you, they'd try and line you up with the job you wanted. And you could sign up for delayed enlistment. And you sign up for a year delayed enlistment. I signed up for a month. And I left there, and I got to the Des Moines airport too late after I'd gone through the process. And I signed up and taken the oath for delayed enlistment. They dropped me off at the airport, and my flight had just left for Spencer.
Oh.
So I had about 6 hours, I think, to kill. It was like... All credit in the world to those people who were sent to a far-off land where someone was going to shoot at them. My hat is off to them. I understand how small a thing I had to sacrifice compared to what they were going to go through. And that was just 5-10 years earlier they were being forced in. I was a volunteer. I had turned control of my life over to the United States government. That was what shook me up. They could have sent me anywhere. They could have put me in harm's way. They could have put me in a lousy job. They could do anything they wanted to with me. And that,
wow,
that was upsetting. It's not something one should enter lightly. It was a difficult decision to make. I do not regret for one second.
So where was basic training?
I went to base training, Lackland Air Force Base. It was 6 weeks, I think. And then because I came in what they call, there's four different categories of job types, of specialties in the Air Force. I knew I wanted to go into electronics, and they chose for me the cryptographic electronics. The stuff that you do with software now, that little, you know, padlock up there. Yeah, that used to be me, except it was the size of a refrigerator, and some of them had vacuum tubes in it. So they had to have people who maintained this electronic equipment, which would encrypt messages, voices. So.
Interesting.
Anyway, so that's what the Air Force chose for me, in its infinite wisdom. And I remember them handing me the packet while standing in formation at Lackland. Just basic training was coming to an end. And everybody was getting their packages and their orders about where they're going to go next, you know, where their school was going to be. And this guy, we waited till the very end, and it was me and two other guys. And we walked up to the podium and said, excuse me, did you forget about us? What's your names? Oh, yeah, Brewer, Lee, and Rivers. He kind of smirked, and he looked over his shoulder and pointed at this building without any windows on. He said, you're going there.
Oh.
It was the cryptographic school at Lackland, where it's just down the street. So I went to school there and learned electronics. And because it's crypto, you have to have a high security clearance. So I had to fill out the paperwork. And they sent agents back to the high school, to Esterville, to interview various people I put down and to interview me for security clearance. So coming back to the high school after that, and somebody stopped me saying, what did you do? Well, the FBI, these guys in trench coats came around and they were asking about you. I promise you, it's for the good, not the bad.
Can this kid be trusted? So was it the theme of electronics that was pretty much the constant throughout your time in the Air Force? And what other places around the country or around the world, I guess, did it take you to?
I was in the same career field all the way through 22 years. But they kept updating the equipment and making it simpler and making it so you could. We went from discrete component swapping to card swapping, circuit card swapping, and eventually that led to entire unit swapping. And you don't need a guy that can fix the unit when all you're going to do is remove and replace the unit. So throughout my career, at the 10-year mark, I decided, well, you can't get a decent job fixing these things, so I'm going to switch over and start installing. So I would do what I could to get assigned to jobs where I would lead teams that did installation, big installations of the whole system. But it was still St. Clair Field, still crypto equipment.
Nice.
I got to build stuff. And even when I got out of the Air Force and I was a contractor, it was crypto. And we installed for radar systems for national security. That was to protect against another 9/11.
Wow. I know you traveled to many places. What were all the stations that you were sent to that you had to transfer to?
Well, Estherville still had a very strong gravitational pull on me. And so they let you fill out a dream sheet, they call it. Because they just assume send people to where they'd prefer to go. It doesn't mean they're gonna, but they'll try. And I signed up for Offutt because nobody down there, remember this is Texas and people from all over the country, nobody wanted to go to Omaha. And I said, well, I want to go to Omaha, not far from home. And son of a gun, if I didn't get assigned to Strategic Air Command at Offutt, south of Omaha there. So that's where I went for my first assignment.
Nice.
Their primary mission was to control the nuclear arsenal around the world.
Okay.
In case of nuclear attack, that was our job. We were deep in the underground behind heavy vault doors and thick concrete walls and floors, so we would be survivable in case of nuclear war. And that way, we in the SAC could launch nuclear missiles back or give the go code for the jets, the bombers to fly out, or the Navy. Submarines were controlled out of there, too.
Okay.
And it was the nuclear triad, but they're just not on such a high alert as they were back then during the Cold War. They took that very seriously.
Wow. Is there a particular mission or job that sticks out in your memory?
The mission, my second assignment out of tech school, I was in SAC Underground for a couple of years, and then there was on Offutt, there's the mission for the President's Doomsday Airplane. It was called the National Emergency Airborne Command Post at the time. Basically, the mystery plane, the 9/11, you know, the one that was flying over Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was that. Its job was, in case if there was a nuclear attack, it would pick up the president or whoever was left in the chain of command and give them a survivable command post so they could do what presidents do.
That's amazing.
So, 4-year special duty assignment. I loved it. No, that was high pressure. That was stress. That was hard.
Was it?
But it's run by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You had all four services who were the battle staff. Their job was to run the country in case of nuclear war. We'd pull alerts a week at a time out of Andrews Air Force Base east of Washington, and we'd be on hard alert where the Klaxon could blow any time, and it did often. And we had to run, you know, to get on the airplane and take off before the nuclear missiles arrived. That was the idea. We had like 15 minutes to get airborne or get, you know, so we escaped the nuclear blast. That was the mission.
Wow.
But, So that was cool, anti-stress, but it was the highlight, I suppose. I mean, it was the coolest thing. Cool airplane. The thing about it is, the job I described to you, crypto, I did that job throughout, but I got to do it in some really cool circumstances. I got to do it on the president's airplane. That was cool. Two of the airplanes I worked on. One of them I flew on, the other one I just worked on the crypto on it. And that was the kneecap, the E4, and the looking glass. Now, the looking glass bird, their mission was up airborne 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for decades as a part of the Cold War, because Offutt, back underground, was a bullseye of the target. That was one of the first places the Russians would hit in case of nuclear war. Okay. That way they could knock out the head of the chicken, if you will, mm-hmm. and we wouldn't be able to shoot back. So in order to make sure that didn't happen, they created an airborne mission, and they had a mission to mirror the mission of the SAC underground. So they could launch nukes from the airplane if Offutt was blown up, if the SAC underground was destroyed.
I see.
So they were up in the air 24-7. Our mission, we weren't up 24-7 with an E-4. We would just be on hard alert, and we'd have like 15 minutes to get in the sky.
Okay. So,
yeah, during that, while I flew on that, I got to go to Brazil, followed Ronald Reagan down to Brazil and Panama, and then went over to Korea, landed on the same base where Dad helped build the runway. Osan. Yeah, I landed on it with the E-4.
Neat.
We landed there and spent 10 days. That was a kick.
So there is another story where you get to hook up with our other Air Force brother, Daryl.
Back when I was pulling a word out of the Andrews on the E-4, there were bases throughout the United States that were designated as presidential support bases in case we had to pull alert there.
Okay.
So every once in a while, they would do a no-notice inspection of these bases. We'd just get on the airplane, take off, and say, we're going to so-and-so, and we'd land. And the base commander and everybody who was anybody on the base would come out, greet the airplane, and they'd go through the exercise of making sure all the support was there. So one such mission we were on, we'd just gotten airborne, and I said, hey, where are we going? And they said, Homestead Air Force Base, Florida. I said, hey, I know a guy.
No way, Homestead, that's where...
That's where Daryl was stationed.
Daryl was stationed.
I got on the switchboard and got his phone number for his shop. I got a hold of him after a couple tries and said, see, so what are you doing? He said, I don't know. I said, well, can you take a little time off from work? Just come on down to the flight line over by base ops, and you'll figure it out. And so, sure enough, he got down there, and he was sitting there. He was maintenance, you know, worked on flight line, so he looked like a guy who works on the flight line with the uniform, you know. Then we came out of the sky and landed, pulled up right in front of him. They had the red carpet there, and all the high muckety-mucks in my airplane got off and went down to talk to all those high muckety-mucks, and then they went off to do briefings and stuff, and then like, I stuck my head out the door up there at the top where the truck stairs were, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I looked out there, and I'm scanning, and I said, hey, there's Daryl, you know. So I gave him the Gomer Pyle wave, and I come out on the steps, and went. So I got to hook up with my brother for a half hour or so.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then I managed to get him on the airplane for a brief tour, which was basically a sprint all the way from nose to tail and tail back to the nose, and then he left. And everybody came on the airplane. We flew back to Andrews.
Oh, that's crazy.
But that was one of those things where you go, can you believe a couple guys from Estimo, Iowa, are standing here now with what the Air Force made us do?
Yeah, look what Mom made me do.
Yeah, it wouldn't have happened.
And now I'm standing in the president's plane. Just one more question was, what would your words of wisdom be to young people of today that are not in the military and don't understand what it really means to make the sacrifices that you do? What would you tell them?
I think young people, they're not going to do what that you say. They're going to do what you do. They learn their lessons watching what you do. And what they'll see in Estherville is a population that is devoted to the military and the mission. It just tickled me to pieces to see the way that people would come out and have that little parade when they sent folks off not long ago mm-hmm. to go serve. That was awesome. And not nearly as cool as the Gold Star Memorial and that circle, the bricks. A lot of people don't do that. So it means a ton to people who serve, knowing that even though the people who are left back to, keep the home fires burning or whatever, may not be able to comprehend the depth of what you experience in the military. And they know that it's something pretty special, and it's worth protecting, and it's worth honoring. The thing about going into the military, they force you to do stuff. But usually the stuff you do, especially when you come from my background, small town, they force you to do some cool things and work with some cool equipment and some cool people. You get to experience things you've never experienced. I never would have experienced. Not just places, but various things I got to do.
Amazing stories. Thank you, Dwayne. I'm very proud of what both of my brothers have accomplished in their time and the service. And thank you for all that you did while you served our country in the United States Air Force. And that wraps up our Veterans Week tribute on KILR.